It's Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden era. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Series in this hour, we continue storylines with One Man's Family and yours truly, Johnny Dollar, later. But right now, part 2 of 10 of the Adventures by Morse story, The Cobra King Strikes Back, from April 28, 1946.
Adventures by Morse. Carlton E. Morse presents The Cobra King Strikes Back, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like high adventure, come with me. If you like the stealth of intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder, come with me.
Two groups of people on strangely dissimilar projects have set out from San Francisco for French Indochina. By chance, they took passage on the same steamship. One party was headed by Dr. Howard Carter, archaeologist, scientist, explorer. Let him tell about his party.
It is my object on this expedition to drive deep into Cambodia and the north-central part of French Indochina in search of a lost city, a sister city of the famous Angkor. In my party, I have Professor Le Brun, medical advisor, my assistant archaeologist, Perry Mills, and my daughter Celia, who is acting as my secretary and historian for the trip. Oh, yes, likewise with us is a young Khmer student, Taquan. Strangely, on the steamship, we met an old friend, Captain Bart Friday. But let Captain Friday speak for himself.
Yes, my right-hand man, Skip Turner, my secretary, Patricia Young, and I are doing a bit of a job for the French government for a change. We're transferring an international prisoner, a citizen of French Indochina, from Hawaii back to Saigon, French capital of Cochinchina. By coincidence, the prisoner, Fen Lo, is of the same race as Taquan, the student in Dr. Carter's party.
Yes, Captain Friday was returning the prisoner, but one night at sea, Fen Lo escaped. In the search that followed, Celia's terrified voice was heard. The searching party found her safe, but with a strange, horrifying story. Last night, the steamship landed its passengers. Dr. Carter's party is staying at the Hotel des Douanes. And now, on this hot bake-oven morning, the members are seated at an outdoor sidewalk table under the arches that mark the hotel's entrance.
My, my, Celia. What a complexion.
I was never so pink in my life, Professor Le Brun.
Oh, it's quite apparent that some young man has been whispering in your ear.
Don't be absurd. It's the heat.
Drink your cool mixture there and you'll feel better.
Oh, and then I'll perspire, Father.
Perspiration, my dear, is all that saves white people out in this country.
Taquan, I actually hate you. You look so cool and comfortable.
You do not need to envy anyone, Miss Celia.
There you are, Celia.
Taquan always says the nicest things, and I actually think he means them. Where's Perry, Father?
Well, I sent him over to the Hotel du Commandant de la Marine, where Captain Friday and his party are staying.
You bring them here?
Yes, Taquan. I want to get this business of Fen Lo's disappearance settled, so that we can start north into the interior of Cambodia at once.
But I know nothing,
Doctor. You mean about the disappearance of Captain Friday's Cambodian prisoner?
Yes. He's thoroughly convinced that Taquan holds the key to the mystery. If he so desires, he can hold up our expedition until the matter is solved.
Oh, I doubt whether he'd do that.
Well, I want the thing thrashed out. I want Taquan to leave Saigon with a clean slate. Otherwise, we're liable to meet trouble everywhere. We'll have enough difficulties without that.
Oh, listen.
What's that, Taquan?
The high priests are passing through with their pony train.
Pony train?
Yes. Small Cochinchina ponies on which they carry their supplies for the monasteries.
Oh, but the bells.
The bells are fastened to the ponies' necks. Oh, look. Here they come. They will pass this way.
Oh, Dad. Look at the little shaggy ponies.
They carry packs large enough for camels.
Eh? Here they come. Golly, they were cute. And the monks in their black habits and their faces covered. Like something out of A Thousand and One Nights.
They move right along in the heat of the day.
Yes, the only thing in the whole country showing any animation. Hardly a creature moving on the streets.
Well, here comes Captain Friday's party.
Uh-huh. Skip Turner and Patricia.
Captain Friday does all right for himself in the way of secretaries.
Oh, I'm crazy about her.
On the later part of the voyage over, I noticed Perry Mills seemed to feel the same way.
Oh? Why shouldn't he?
You and Patricia seem to have grown very fond of each other.
Oh, yes. I wish you were going into the interior with us. So you found the energy to walk out in this sizzling heat, Patricia.
I've got a slave driver for a boss. Where he goes, it's expected I tag along.
Morning, Miss Carter. Doctor?
Hi, Professor LeBron.
Oh, Skip Turner in pith helmet and white gown.
That's me. That's what the ladies ordered.
What about something cool to drink?
Oh, definitely. I'd like something with lime or mint in it.
Oh, let me get the drinks for the crowd.
We have to go to the bar at this hour.
Oh, never mind then.
Of course. Everybody'll want something. I'll take Skip along for company.
I'm your man.
Well, come along. Oh, by the way, Dr. Carter, may I borrow Taquan in about a half hour?
Yes, of course.
I've got a Star Sapphire spotted in a shop down the street. I like the stone, but not the price. I thought perhaps Taquan could talk his fellow countrymen into being more reasonable.
Will you do that for the professor, Taquan?
Oui, with pleasure. Oh, good. Oh, come along, Skip. We'll get the drinks.
Yes, sir. I saw something tall and pink and frothy. I think I'll order a quart of it.
And, Captain Friday, I want this matter cleared up once and for all. I intend taking Taquan with me into the interior, so if you have any charges to file against him, will you please discuss them with me here and now and see if we can't come to some understanding. Once the thing gets into the hands of the French government out here, there'll be no end of red tape.
No, Dr. Carter, I have no charges to file against Taquan. I know in my own heart that he had something to do with the release of Fen Lo, my prisoner. But I have no proof. None whatever.
Then you don't intend taking any action that will hold up my expedition?
I intend keeping Taquan under observation. Dr. Carter, will you permit me to ask Taquan one question?
Why, certainly. It's his privilege to answer or not.
Taquan.
Yes?
Taquan, is Fen Lo dead?
Miss Celia has told you.
Never mind what Miss Celia told me. I'm asking you. Is Fen Lo dead?
Captain Friday, I cannot answer that.
Won't you, mean?
No, I cannot.
Why not?
For the same reason you cannot. I do not know.
Miss Carter.
Yes, Captain Friday?
Miss Carter, will you go over your whole story again for me?
You mean the night your prisoner escaped on the ship?
Yes, please.
Well, it was stuffy in my cabin, and I wasn't a bit sleepy, so pretty soon I slipped out of my room and down on the lower deck where I'd found a nice little corner out of the breeze and still could be quite close to the rail.
Yes, yes.
Well, I was in a shadow and awfully comfortable. Anyway, I hadn't been there very long when I must have dropped off to sleep. You know how it is with the throbbing of the engines and the swishing of the water.
And then what happened?
Well, the next thing I knew, I was wide awake. There was a dark figure standing by the rail, almost in front of me, about 10 feet away. And it was making the most blood-curdling wail.
Like a mere death chant.
Yes, Dad. Well, he stopped for a moment, and it was very still. Then he began again, and suddenly I saw the blade of his knife in his hand. Just a flash of it in the moonlight as he raised it and struck himself with it.
Are you certain he plunged it into himself?
Oh, he must have. His knees sagged, and he had to hold himself up. That was when I screamed.
Yes. Now, think very carefully. What happened after that?
Well, he crawled up on the rail, and then for the first time, I noticed there was something lying on the deck. A duffel bag or something. He pulled it up after him, onto the rail.
Was it tied to him?
Oh, there was a rope on it, but I couldn't be sure whether it was fastened to him.
Did it seem very heavy?
Well, it must have been. He had an awful time getting it up.
And then both he and the bag plunged over the side. Is that it?
Yes, sir. Just as Father and Perry ran down the deck.
Here come drinks for everybody. Where's Professor LeBrun?
We met Perry Mills, and the two of them went down to take another gander at that Star Sapphire. All right, pick your drink. There's them that likes theirs frosted, and there's them that likes them iced.
Oh, Skip, you shouldn't have brought me any more. I haven't finished this one.
Keep it. You'll need another and another and another to keep the little red devils away. Here you are, Captain.
Which one for me?
Why, both of them. A green one and a yellow one.
Thanks for nothing. Taquan.
Yes?
Taquan, would you have any objections in assisting a friend to commit suicide?
If it was his will, no.
Sure you wouldn't. I know you guys. You wouldn't have any objection to doing the job yourself either if you thought you could get away with it, would you?
It would depend most certainly upon the circumstances, Mr. Skip.
There's sure a lot of queer setups in this man's country.
Have you felt it too, Skip?
Felt it? I've seen it. Look out there in the street. All them kids practically as raw as the day they was born.
Well, but that doesn't mean that they're peculiar, Skip. That's just a custom. You know, after all, man suits his character, his customs, and his mannerisms to his environment.
Well, that's okay with me. They could do all that and still keep the shirts on, couldn't they?
Now, seriously, though, there is a strange atmosphere hanging over Saigon. Something secretive, something smoldering. And I'm not just talking about the mysterious East.
It isn't the port of Saigon alone, Patricia. It's the whole of Cambodia, a veil of uncertainty, the sense of danger.
But how exciting.
What kind of danger, Dr. Carter?
Well, don't you remember me telling you aboard ship how legend has woven a strange story about this land? How it's supposed that hundreds of years ago, some strange force visited French Indochina and drove all the inhabitants from the great cities, wiped the cultivated lands of northern Cambodia free of civilization, and then the jungles and luxuriant plant life crept swiftly in and engulfed everything, everything that had been built by man.
And you mean to say that that strange, same force still hangs over this part of the world?
When you say something, do you mean the supernatural, Father?
It's hard for an Occidental to say, Celia. There are strange, easty forces at work here, beyond our grasp or understanding.
Well, mostly imagination, isn't it, Doctor?
Wouldn't it be glorious to go to Dr. Carter's party? Couldn't we go? Hey, couldn't you arrange it, boss?
We are going.
What?
Hey, are you kidding, Captain?
We're going with Dr. Carter. If doubling the size of his party won't be too much inconvenience.
But Captain Friday, why on earth do you want to go into the interior of Cambodia?
Yeah, what's the idea, Chief? If I want to scramble through the brush, I'd rather go back to San Francisco and climb Mount Tamalpais. It's safer.
Shame on you, Skip. I thought you were a fire eater.
Sword swallowing's my specialty.
No, Carter, I'm serious.
Well, Captain, this is most astonishing. Taquan, what's wrong?
No.
What's the matter?
No, they must not go.
Well, what do you mean?
I take you. I guide you many strange places. These others, they must not go.
Don't want me along, huh? Well, it's just too bad, Taquan, because I'm going.
It is for your own good, I warn you.
No. Yeah? You mean we're sticking our necks out if we go?
I cannot be responsible.
Hey, Captain, I think I would like to go along on this trip. Sounds interesting.
It's all settled. Dr. Carter, I'll stand our share of the expedition expenses. I'll guarantee that there'll be no interference with your scientific work.
Why, under those conditions, I'd be delighted to have you.
Patricia, did you hear that? You're going along.
It's wonderful. Captain Friday, I'm your secretary for life.
Taquan, where are you going?
I am to meet Professor Lebrun and Mr. Perry.
But why right at this moment?
Oh, they have gone to jewelry shop. It is better I should be present. You please excuse my departure?
Is it all right, Captain Friday?
Yes, let him go.
Very well. We'll expect you back for lunch.
Yes, when all is returned at feeding hour.
Huh. You notice the way that bird looks at you?
I think he has interesting eyes.
Yeah, the eyes of a fanatic. Taquan would as soon slit your throat as look at you.
In the courtyard of the typical Saigon Hotel on the coast of French Indochina sit Captain Friday, his right-hand man Skip Turner, and the famed archaeologist Dr. Howard Carter. Outside the terrace, the sun is blazing and smoldering. Within the cool shade, Captain Friday is unfolding a plot of intrigue.
Dr. Carter, there's something very, very peculiar going on in Cambodia at the present time.
You've seen something?
Well, to begin with, the French authorities almost went down on their knees to me this morning, begging me to accompany your party.
Well, that's strange.
Hey, you mean we gotta be an armed guard?
No. At least I don't think there's danger for your party, Dr. Carter. It's something else. If it was dangerous, they'd simply forbid you to go north.
Taquan seemed frightened at the idea of you joining our party, Captain.
Yes, I think I know why. I don't believe Fenlo committed suicide on the ship. I think he's reached Cochin China and is hiding out, awaiting an opportunity to connect with Taquan again.
Why do you think that, Captain?
Well, if Fenlo is alive and a friend of Taquan, it would explain why Taquan wouldn't want me on the trip.
Oh, sure. He knows we'd nab him and turn him into the French government. Oh, here come the gals.
Oh, this is much more fun.
And besides that, we'll have to get some clothes suitable for the trip.
Hey, don't you ever talk about nothing but clothes.
Oh, I've already got mine, Patricia. Dad gave me a whole list of things before we left San Francisco.
Would you go sit down?
No, thank you, Dr. Carter. I'm going to look over Celia's outfits for the trip.
We'll need a lot of things to go into the interior.
You hear that, Captain?
Yes, I was afraid of that.
Father, I'm going to stay with Patricia at her hotel tonight. There's so many details to discuss.
Do you mind?
Not at all, my dear.
I hope the budget will provide proper traveling equipment, boss.
I think we'll manage.
I see where this trip's going to cost you money, Captain.
Goodbye. We'll see you later.
Bye, folks.
This is Patricia's first big adventure. Well, here now, Dr. Carter. You and Skip draw your chairs up. I want to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Just as I thought.
Just as you thought about what?
I knew you had something up your sleeve all along.
Well, I have. You'd better keep it up yours, too. Dr. Carter, how important is the seven-headed cobra in the lives of the people of Cambodia?
Why, it's the most sacred emblem in existence. It represents a supreme being himself to these people.
Did you ever hear of the emerald seven-headed cobra coiled on a base of pure gold?
The sacred cobra of Taprom.
What if it were stolen from the country?
Stolen? Why, what are you talking about, man? The Taprom cobra has been lost for centuries. Its existence is entirely legendary.
But supposing its existence were known to be fact, that its whereabouts were surmised, what would that mean?
Is that the truth? Are you talking facts?
Now, wait a moment. Answer my question.
The recovery of the Taprom cobra would mark a new era in the history of Cambodia. It would mean that everyone with a drop of Khmer blood in his veins would migrate back to the north. It would mean the rebuilding of the Khmer Empire.
And why would it mean that?
Yeah, how come it's so doggone important?
The people have been waiting for this sign ever since the downfall of the empire. The seven-headed emerald cobra vanished just before the kingdom fell. At that time, one of the great priests prophesied the end of the empire and added that the Khmer people would be as scattered sands over the earth until the cobra reappeared.
So the return of the cobra king would be the fulfillment of an ancient prophecy.
Well, come, what is it all about? Answer me, Captain. I tell you, if there's any truth in your words, we are about to witness one of the strangest transformations in a country that has ever taken place. Is it true?
The French authorities are fearfully wrought up. I'm afraid it's true.
Afraid? Afraid? Why, man, I'd give my life to see this thing happen. Why, they would sweep up this great valley one seething throng of humanity. It would be one mammoth crusade with men, women, and children turned into a maddening mass of religious frenzy.
That's just exactly what the French officials fear.
Why, these people would go into this wilderness and turn it into an habitable place overnight.
Undoubtedly, they'd try. But think of the hundreds and thousands of these people, stirred by religious fervor, who would die miserably in that wilderness.
Oh, there'll be no holding them once the news of the cobra spread about.
Yeah, the French officials know that, too. Tell me, Doctor, what would happen if the cobra were stolen?
There would be such an uprising as this world has never witnessed before. It'd make the Boxer Rebellion seem insignificant. Every foreigner in Cochin China would be cut down without mercy.
Hey, is this diamond snake, or whatever you call it, worth anything? I mean in good, round American dollars.
I know an institution in London that would pay $5 million for it.
Hey, Captain, did you say you know where this gold snake is?
I did not, but Taquan knows.
What?
Taquan knows if anybody does.
Good gosh, and here we've let him slip out of our hands.
Well, how do you figure that, Skip? He just walked down the street to a jewelry shop to meet Professor LeBrun in Perry Mills.
Yeah, but ain't he liable to make a duck for the high timber?
I have implicit faith in Taquan.
He won't run. He's known about it for a number of years. He was just waiting for the right time to reveal his secret.
But why is the present the time to strike?
Both he and Fenlow are prepared. They're well-educated. They're capable leaders. They've been groomed for this role of prophets with tremendous care by the old men, the Khmer high priests.
Hey, you're just full of information. Where'd you dig it up?
From the French intelligence service here in Saigon. They've been watching the natives for years.
Still, I don't understand, Captain. Why do they want you to go into the North Country? Why don't they send one of their own spies who knows the country and the people?
Every available man they have is known to the Khmer's priests.
Be careful, Captain. There's a pop-eyed Hindu rug peddler standing behind you.
Be on your way!
Look at him skitter.
Skip, I think your Hindu was a Cambodian.
Yeah? Well, I'll bet he carries a knife a foot long under those rugs, whatever he is.
Go on with your story, Captain.
Well, as I say, Taquan's coming and the mysterious disappearance of Fen Lo have thrown the authorities into a panic. Came too unexpectedly. They're not prepared.
And so they want to make you the goat.
I jumped at the opportunity.
Yeah, but what are we going to do after we get up there?
Keep our eyes open, keep our ears open, see what we can see, hear what we can hear.
Is that all, Captain Friday?
Those were my instructions from the French authorities.
Captain Friday, I think I know what you have in mind. If I'm correct in my surmise, I beg you, don't do it. I beg you to remain in Saigon.
Be careful, Doctor. That little Annamite woman has passed by our table 3 times in the last 10 minutes.
Hey, you mean that cute little trick with the black umbrella?
Oh, careful, Skip, careful. Hello, here comes Professor LeBrun. Did you get your precious gem, Professor?
Yes, we did very well. Oh, Dr. Carter, will you go down to the Ling place, 2 doors the other side of the Continental Hotel terraces? You know the place.
Yes, but what's the matter?
Where's Taquan? Why didn't he return with you?
Taquan is waiting for Dr. Carter.
Waiting for me? Then I'd better hurry. Excuse me, gentlemen. I'll take no longer than necessary.
Well, what do you know about that? Hey, Captain, what kind of a shenanigan is this?
My word, Skip. What is suspicious nature?
Yeah, well, I've seen you pull some smart ones before. Are you sure you ain't along on this expedition as something besides medical advisor for Dr. Carter?
Oh, come, Skip. We are all one big family now.
Yeah?
Professor LeBrun, just how much of Taquan's history do you know?
Only what he has chosen to tell me.
A very lucid explanation.
Thanks.
But not in the least satisfactory.
Oh, see here, Captain. Really, now that is most embarrassing.
Listen, Professor. There must be something up, or why all this evasiveness?
My dear Captain Friday, has it ever occurred to you that personal information given in confidence is information not to be ballyhooed about the town?
Good. That answers my question.
Most gratifying, I'm sure. Aha. Here comes Taquan himself.
But he's alone. Where's Dr. Carter?
Hey, things are beginning to move.
Taquan, where's the doctor?
I have here a message for Professor LeBrun and for Captain Friday.
Message? Message from whom?
You will read it, sir.
Yes, of course. Taquan, what does this mean?
I know not what is in message.
LeBrun, do you know anything about this?
Not having seen it.
Well, read it.
Well. It looks like Dr. Carter's in an hurry.
Hey, what's the matter? What are you talking about?
The message is from Dr. Carter. He says he's leaving immediately from Angkor Wat. The party is to follow at once in charge of Captain Friday and myself.
Gone? Dr. Carter's gone? Why?
My dear sir, I haven't the slightest idea.
Taquan, who'd he go with?
The Captain Friday was quite right. Fenlo is not dead.
Oh, dear.
Are you awake, Patricia?
Isn't it the limit? I'm so excited I can't even close my eyes. You sleepy?
Not very.
It's a shame. Me rolling and tossing and sighing after bringing you over to my hotel. Bed's nice, though, isn't it?
I didn't suppose they had beds like this up in this part of the world.
Wasn't it the most curious thing, the way your father just up and left us?
I hope Dad's all right. It'd be terrible to have anything happen to him.
That Taquan gives me a creepy feeling.
I hope Captain Friday and the professor get on together. They're to be joint leaders of the party until we get to Angkor Wat.
Just think of it. Angkor. A place you read about in books. I never dreamed of actually seeing it.
Cambodia, the realm of the Cobra King.
And tomorrow we leave Saigon. Tomorrow. I'm certainly glad we did our shopping this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Must be beautiful to the north. Your father was telling us. Red and purple flowers, poinsettias, rhododendrons, orange and yellow lilies, cane and coconut and bananas and bamboo, and rice and cactus and creepers. Can you imagine a country like that, Celia? Oh, go on to sleep.
Hmm? What'd you say, Patricia?
Go on to sleep, Celia. I was just daydreaming.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Listen.
Hmm?
I left the window open. Did you hear anything?
What are you talking about?
Didn't you hear a noise at the window?
Of course not. You're all nerves tonight, Patricia.
It isn't nerves. I heard something.
Well, what did it sound like?
I don't know. Listen.
Well, I don't hear anything. Just the usual night noises, baby crying, that sort of thing.
That isn't what I mean. There, there.
What was it like?
Kind of, well, I don't know. Like the wind or rustling of paper or something.
Well, we're only one story off the street. We're liable to hear almost anything.
Keep quiet. Listen. There.
Patricia.
Sounds like steam escaping.
Hush, Patricia. Patricia, do you know what that is?
No.
Patricia. Patricia, there's a cobra in this room.
Nada. A snake?
Yes. Oh, look there in the moonlight. Please, please don't scream.
Don't put your hand over my mouth.
You mustn't scream. You mustn't. Oh, what's that? Look. Watch the cobra. It's rinsing its body.
Oh.
Terror of Cambodia has descended upon the Carter expedition. The cobra, emblem of the ancient Khmer civilization, has raised its head in defiance against this party of invading Americans. And it wasn't until Captain Friday, his secretary Patricia, and the reckless Skip Turner joined the expedition that trouble began. You have just heard the second chapter of The Cobra King Strikes Back, a new thriller in the series of Adventures by Morse. Next week, you will hear Chapter 3, entitled The Mad King of Anchor, which will take you deeper and deeper into the jungles and into the sinister intrigue of French Indochina.
Adventures by Morse, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 28th of April, 1946, Episode 2 of 10 of The Cobra King Strikes Back. David Ellis in the title role as Captain Friday, taking over for the previous actor on a 3-part and 10-part storyline on the series, Elliot Lewis. This is an hour of continuing stories on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for One Man's Family, continuing on with the Book of Teddy. This is Book 78, Chapter 18, from September 26th, 1950 on NBC.
One Man's Family, brought to you every weekday night at this time, transcribed by Bactine. The remarkable new family antiseptic and germicide. Another fine, dependable product of Miles Laboratories, makers of Alka-Seltzer. Overheard between Teddy and Paul in his studio at the top of the family home.
What time is Elwood coming, Teddy?
8:30. But he'll be early, I'm afraid.
Afraid? That doesn't sound very ardent.
He wanted to come over so we could talk about the place he bought in San Rafael, about fixing it up.
Well?
I wish you'd go look at it, Paul. I think it's just hopeless.
Mm-hmm. So that's how it is with the barbers today. Friends, next time you go to your drugstore, ask for Bactine, the amazing new type household antiseptic. Bactine is powerful in killing germs, yet so gentle that it can be used even on babies' tender skin. Bactine has many advantages over the old-fashioned antiseptic. First, Bactine neither stings or burns on open cuts and scratches like harsher antiseptics. Second, Bactine is a clear, colorless liquid that doesn't leave ugly stains on skin or clothing. Third, the clean, fresh odor of Bactine makes it pleasant to use. We're sure you'll find Bactine to be the ideal family antiseptic. It is marvelous for cuts, scratches, burns, and abrasions. Bactine cleanses the injury and helps prevent infection and reduce pain. As a hand disinfectant, Bactine remains effective up to 6 hours after application to guard against reinfection. So get either the 30 or 70 cent size bottle and prove to yourself that Bactine is the finest antiseptic you ever used. Chapter 18, Book 78. A cold fog is moving in from the ocean tonight and is gradually sweeping up to cover the hills of San Francisco. In Seacliff, the houses have already lost their identity. The smoke from the fireplaces swirls and rises slowly into the fog, and there is a smell of autumn in the air. In the Barber family home at the top of the house, Paul's studio is warmed by a cheerful fire and is snug against the night. Paul is sunk deep in a comfortable old chair reading. His adopted daughter, Teddy, sits on a stool and stares into the fire.
Wish Elwood weren't coming over tonight.
Hmm?
Nothing. Just talking out loud. Wasn't a very nice thing to say, anyway.
You feeling sort of low tonight, Teddy?
Well, I'm all right. Go ahead and read your book, Paul.
You're far more interesting in this book. I was reading because I didn't think you felt like talking.
I've got to go in my room and fix myself up pretty quick anyway.
What time's Elwood coming over?
I told him to come about 8:30. He'll be early, I'm afraid.
Afraid? It doesn't sound very ardent.
Oh, I didn't mean it to sound that way. It's just that... Well, I'm not in the mood to talk about that place. Guess that's what's the matter.
You mean the place Elwood bought over in San Rafael?
Mm-hmm. He wanted to come over so we could talk about what we could do to fix it up.
Oh, that ought to be fun, making plans for your future home. I've always had the idea that was part of the joy of being engaged.
Paul, do you suppose you'll be able to go over there and look at it before too long?
Of course. I want to see it very much. It's just that I've been so busy lately at the airport. It wasn't because I wasn't interested.
I know, but I do want your opinion. Couldn't the two of us go alone? And then you could tell me honestly what you think about it.
Well, what I think is very important. You and Elwood are the ones who are going to live in it.
Yes, but you can tell me whether you think the place has any possibilities and not just hopeless.
Hopeless?
Oh, not that exactly, I guess. You know what I mean.
I don't think I do. What do you mean?
Well, as it is now, it's depressing and pretty awful. Of course, Father Barber says we'll be able to fix it up all right. He got through talking to me. He almost had me believing it was a real dream house. When I stop and think what it's really like, I just want to give up.
Give up what?
The whole idea.
Wait a minute now, let me get this straight. Are you trying to tell me that this house has got you down to the extent that it's going to put up some kind of barrier to your marriage?
Well, if we started our marriage in a place that made me unhappy, don't you think that would be unfair? I mean, it wouldn't be a sound basis to start our life together on. Marriages these days are enough of a problem without having something wrong right at the very beginning.
You may be right, but are you sure you know what this something wrong is?
Well, I'm talking about the house.
That's what you're talking about, yes, but is that...
All right, I won't say anything more about it. I'll wait till you've seen the place for yourself. And then if you think I'm silly, okay. But until you've seen it, you're not able to judge whether I'm right or wrong. But I'll bet you'll agree with me that it's really pretty impossible.
Let's assume that it's utterly impossible, that you hate it. For the moment, let's just assume that, huh?
That won't be hard.
So, where do we go from there?
Well, that's just it. I don't know.
Don't you think it's about time you found out?
Well, I don't know why you're taking that tone with me, Paul. I'm just trying to straighten out in my own mind what's the best thing to do under the circumstances. This is a tough situation I'm in, and it's not so easy.
I didn't say it was easy. Problems are never easy. If they were, there wouldn't be problems. All I'm trying to do is to help you find some kind of solution.
No, I'm sorry. I know you are, and I want you to.
What I'm getting at, Teddy, is this. Are you using this house as an excuse to create a situation or a problem or whatever you want to call it?
Well, no. Why would you think that?
In other words, if Elwood hadn't made this mistake in getting the wrong place, you'd be quite happy and anxious to get married as soon as you possibly could?
Well...
There's nothing to stand in the way of your marriage now except the problem of this home, right?
I suppose that's right, yes.
So that brings us right back to the question, what are you going to do about it? Is it insurmountable? Or are you going to go ahead and get married and make the best of it?
Oh, Paul, I don't want to make the best of things. I want them to be right to begin with. That's what I've been saying.
Teddy, you're going to be running up against problems and trouble and situations your whole married life. It just happens that in this case, you're faced with it before you marry. Teddy, that's good. If you can work this out satisfactorily, you... You'd better prepare to meet later difficulties.
I don't want difficulties. You get married to be happy.
If you're clinging to an adolescent concept that marriage is going to transport you to another plane where there's only moonlight and roses, you're headed for disillusionment.
Yes, but you want me to be sure I love Elwood before I marry him, don't you?
Isn't this a little late to be wondering about that? Seems to me you should have made up your mind about that before you became engaged to him. Are you in doubt about it?
No.
You are. That's why I said earlier that you should make sure that you weren't using this house as an excuse to create a problem. You see, Teddy, what you're doing is trying to find something to justify the way you feel. In the back of your mind, you're not quite sure about marrying Elwood, so you fasten on this house as a good reason for not doing it. We can always find a reason for what we do, but we ought to be terribly sure that it's the true reason. Sure, you're disappointed about the house. It isn't at all what you'd like to have. But if you really love Elwood, that wouldn't stop your marrying him.
Why are you so anxious to have me get married?
I'm not anxious.
Well, you sound that way. Makes me a little annoyed. Feel as if you want to get rid of me.
I won't dignify that childish remark with an answer.
All right, this isn't childish, what I'm going to ask you now. This is something I want you to answer very honestly and frankly. Will you promise to tell me truthfully?
Yes, I can. What is it?
Well, if you had the choice... Is Elwood the type of man you'd pick out as a husband for your daughter?
I'll answer that with another question. Is Christine the woman you would have picked as the wife for me?
No. Oh, not that I don't like Christine. I'm dreadfully sorry that you weren't able to marry her, but she isn't anything like what I pictured as a wife for you. But that's different. I don't suppose there was a woman ever lived that I think was good enough for you, Paul.
Nonetheless, she was the one I would have married because I loved her. As I felt we were essentially right for each other. And that would be so regardless of what anybody else thought. Isn't it the same with you and Elwood? He's the man you want for your husband, and if you love him, And if I were you, I'd marry him, no matter what.
Oh, Cole, when I talk to you like this, all my doubts and happiness begin.
Come in. Oh, hi, Cliff.
Hi. Boyfriend's downstairs, Teddy.
Is Elwood here already?
Sure is. Is it too early for you?
Well, I was going to fix myself up a bit before he came.
Oh, you look swell. Elwood's so much in love, he wouldn't care if he came down to Mother Hubbard. Is that right, Paul?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Cliff, would you mind going down and telling him it'll be a few minutes before I'd be ready?
Sure. Take your time, honey. Daddy's talking to him anyway.
I've been sitting here in front of this fire until my face is all red and shiny, I know. I just have to put on some makeup.
Yeah, okay, I'll tell him.
Thank you.
I'll fix it, baby.
Why does Elwood always have to come ahead of time?
Probably because he's anxious to see you. Sort of a compliment, no way?
I don't think it's a compliment. It's silly. I'll just keep him waiting. Maybe you'll take the hint.
You're really annoyed, aren't you?
Yes, I am, a little.
At him or yourself?
Well, why should I be annoyed at myself? I haven't done anything. It's Elwood.
You don't want to go down and talk about the house with him, do you?
No, I don't, really.
So actually, you're annoyed at yourself because you feel guilty about that. But you find a reason to be annoyed at Elwood. That makes it his fault that you're out of sorts. Nice projection, huh?
Oh, Paul, I guess you're right. I couldn't love him and do that sort of thing. Why don't I go down and tell him it's no use that he irritates me? He must. I was full of the idea of love and marriage sitting here talking to you. And the minute Clifford came in and said Elwood was downstairs, I had a feeling of resentment rise up in me as though he'd intruded. Could I possibly love him and have thoughts like that? Paul, I'm so mixed up about what to do.
I'm afraid you'll always be mixed up, Teddy, until you get to know yourself and what you want from life. If you want marriage and a man who adores you, who's steady, reliable, and loyal, I think you'll find all of that in Elwood. Mind you, I don't say you should marry. Maybe he isn't right for you. I don't know. But I wonder if you'll ever find the man you be sure is right. It's true that Elwood isn't colorful or glamorous. It's true that he may not be a brilliant conversationalist. But you've known men who were. They intrigued you, but you didn't marry them. Why?
Because I wanted a steady, solid man for a husband, I guess. I see what you mean.
In any case, make up your mind. It isn't fair to Elwood to go on with this now-I-will, now-I-won't business. You told him you'd marry him. Either go through with it or call it off. He loves you. He deserves a definite decision, one way or the other. Now, what that decision is up to you.
All right. I'll tell him tonight. I'll tell him I'm going to go through with it. That I'm ready to get the marriage license whenever he is.
Well, it's definite anyway. I hope it's what you really want.
So do I, Paul. So do I.
Here's the family again.
Is Elwood in the library, Cliff?
Sure is. Sitting right on the edge of his chair, waiting for you.
Thank you.
Hey, cheer up, baby. You look like you were going in to face a firing squad.
One Man's Family, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC broadcast from September 27th, 1950. Finally, in this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday, part two of five of the Yours Truly Johnny Dollar story, The Chesapeake Fraud Matter, heard on CBS on October 19th, 1955.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
Pat Gallagher, Universal. How'd you make out with Miss Reardon?
I met her. She thinks I'm an insurance broker or something. I told her I knew her husband when he was alive.
Industrial hazard lying. Part of the business, John. Did you find out anything that'll help you?
I found out she's pretty upset about everything in the world.
That's the only report you have for Universal Adjustment Bureau?
Oh, she invited me for cocktails. I'm going to call her later this afternoon and keep the date. Maybe I'll get some information then.
Cocktails, say, you made out okay.
Oh, shut up.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Baltimore, Maryland. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Chesapeake fraud matter. Expense account item 3, $23.60, long distance telephone call to George Hanley in Denver, Colorado. George is an old friend of mine in the private detective business. I told him about the report that John Reardon was still alive and living in Denver under the name of Frank Bowers. I requested him to gather information that would help in determining whether Bowers was really John Reardon or not. I spent the remainder of the day reading over the facts of the case as supplied to me by Pat Kelleher of Universal Adjustment. Expense account item 4, 10 cents, another phone call. This one to John Reardon's widow.
Hello?
Mrs. Reardon?
Yes.
This is Johnny Dollar.
Oh, yes, Mr. Dollar. You're the man who used to know John?
Yes.
I asked you over for a drink. I hope you're coming.
What time?
7 would be fine.
I was at her home at 7 o'clock, knocking on the door. It was a nice home, and she seemed like a nice person. Even nicer than the night before.
I asked you to call me Elizabeth, Mr. Dollar.
I remember. Yes, you also asked me not to mention your husband's name.
I wish you'd forget that. I was upset last night when we met. Forgive me. How's your drink?
That's swell.
I don't know why, but I feel I should explain myself a little more about saying what I did about John. I was very shocked at his death. I suppose I still am, even though it was 5 years ago. It always disturbs me when I'm reminded of it. Yet it's good to be reminded, I suppose, to know that he really is dead, that he won't come through that door anymore. That he won't telephone me from the office or make any plans with me. Does that make sense?
I suppose so.
Oh, we can drink another one. Sometimes things make more sense with a few drinks.
Sometimes they don't make any sense at all, Elizabeth.
That's right, too, Johnny. You know, I like you.
I like you.
Tell me about your business. You said insurance?
Yes.
You're a broker?
Well, not exactly.
A salesman?
No. I'm an investigator.
That must be terribly interesting work. I suppose you travel everywhere. Have you ever been to...
She had a nice mouth. Soft, frank, wide-open eyes. A couple of times I was on the verge of telling her exactly what I was working on and why I was talking to her. But I didn't. Somehow I felt comfortable in the house. Over the drinks and music, we eventually got around to John Reardon. She told me of their 4 years' marriage that ended with his sudden death.
Gave me everything I could possibly want to have. Why do I tell you all this? I never talked to anybody about it.
Oh, I don't know. Possibly because you just want to talk to somebody about it.
You're easy to talk to, Johnny. I was 19 when I was married. I'd never known another man. It was wonderful at first. Wonderful all the time, I suppose. I just wasn't grown up enough to realize it.
Can I ask you a question?
Surely.
Did you really love him?
Yes.
I'm not convinced.
Why?
Oh, just a feeling.
Well, I did. I'm not so sure he loved me. That's an awful thing to say.
No, I don't think so. It's probably been on your mind a long time. You don't know me from a load of coal, but we've sat here and talked an hour. I think I know you.
I think so, too.
You still seem very despondent about his death. Yet you aren't sure he loved you.
I loved him.
Oh.
Here I am explaining things again, I suppose because they sound so foolish. Once we both loved each other. Very much. But we kicked it away. We just didn't get along. He was out spending his money on other people, and I was taking up this pastime. Can you tell when I've had too much?
No.
Thank you. Thank you awfully. Oh, Hugh!
Elizabeth.
Johnny, this is Hugh Bryan. This is Mr. Dollar, Hugh.
Hello, Mr. Dollar. How's your drink, Liz?
Fine.
Now tell me again, who is this?
This is Mr. Dollar.
What's your business, Mr. Dollar? I haven't seen you around before. Obviously, you just met Mrs. Reardon, or you'd never never start drinking with her.
I wouldn't?
No. That's true, Liz, isn't it?
He was a friend of John's, Hugh.
Well, that's nice. I don't think I ever heard him mention your name. I was a friend of his, too. As a matter of fact, his attorney.
Hugh, you don't have to do this in front of
me. And since John is no longer here, I've undertaken to look after some of the problems he left behind him, as an old friend would. Elizabeth, say goodnight to Mr. Dollar.
Now, look here, Hugh.
Say goodnight to him. He's just leaving.
Maybe it's better right now, Johnny. Good night.
Do you want me to leave?
She just said it would be better.
I'll call you at your hotel. Good night.
Good night, mister.
No, no, you still have something in your glass. Finish your drink.
Okay.
An old friend of John's. That's good. Very good.
It is?
She picked you up in a bar last night. I saw her. I was with her. You never knew John Reardon in your life. You have no business being here, and I don't like cheap opportunists invading her home.
Evidently, you can talk to her any way you want to, and she'll take it. Why, I don't know. But don't talk to me that way. I don't have to take anything.
You were just leaving, weren't you?
Hugh Bryan was a large, bristling sort of man with a smooth manner. I didn't like him, and he didn't like me. Expense account item 5, $18. Even cab fares, lunches, etc., in and about Chesapeake Bay, talking to the principals connected with the boat explosion death of John Reardon. One of these was Lieutenant Jack Halverson, United States Coast Guard.
You want some coffee?
If I have to go out in that wind to get it, no.
Make it right here for just such occasions. Just a sec, I'll plug her in. There.
Brother, someday.
It's nice in the summertime. Now, what can I do for you?
Tell me about the boat going down. You made out the report for the Coast Guard.
You mean the Sharpstons boat?
Yeah. We have a reliable witness who thinks that one of the passengers, a man named John Reardon, didn't go down with it at all, that he's still alive.
You said you had my report. Those are the facts.
But you picked up three bodies. Why not the fourth? Why not Reardon's?
Well, we searched the bay for a solid week looking for his body. We used every piece of equipment at our disposal. We did everything we could.
But you didn't find him.
First you come in here complaining about our weather, now you're mad about the way we're on the Coast Guard.
I'm sorry.
It's a very lousy-sounding apology. What do you want to find out?
How that boat exploded? Why you couldn't find Reardon's body if you found the others?
Now, look, if a bunch of rich jerks want to take a high-powered boat out and they don't know the first thing about high-test fuel or engine running, they're doing it at their own risk. That help?
There's something. I wish you could have put it on the report.
That's my ideas, buddy. The report just has the facts. Now, for the other, about finding Reardon, I don't know why. He blew up, went down, or drifted out to sea. If his body had been in the bay, we'd found it.
Was there a chance he might have survived and been rescued?
All we had left of the boat was pieces of wreckage. And if he was rescued, it was never reported, and I wouldn't know about that.
Could that have happened?
Sure. I could be an admiral tomorrow, too.
It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon when I got to Elizabeth Reardon's house.
You.
Hello, Mr. Bryan. Is Mrs. Reardon in?
No.
Then I'll wait. It's important that I see her.
I thought I made it clear to you last night I didn't want her being molested.
You did make it clear and cruel, Mr. Bryan. Now, I'm here...
Any business for her comes to me first.
I'm an insurance investigator.
I know that, she told me.
But she didn't tell you because she didn't know, and I didn't want her to know, that I'm working on a case that involves her.
What?
I have a report that her husband might still be alive.
Come in, Mr. Dollar.
I'll have to admit that Hugh Bryan's concern was as genuine as his surprise. He led me into the house and we sat at the bar. Only this time, no one had a drink. He listened while I told him about the report of Paul Coombs, that John Reardon was living in Denver under the name of Frank Bowers.
Do you think there's any truth to him?
It doesn't matter what I think, Mr. Bryan. I have to investigate it.
Yes, of course. And if he were alive, it'd be the best thing in the world.
Would it?
Of course. She's been lost without him all these years. She needs him, Mr. Dollar. She always needed him. This little bit of drinking has been going on too long. These tearful little episodes with one man or another. Yes, I mistook you for one of those last night. I apologize for that sincerely. Actually, Mr. Dollar, she's been quite a task.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe I better talk to her now.
Do you have to?
There's certain information I'd like to get. I think she's the only one who can give it to me.
You'll have to tell her about the report?
Yes.
And there's probably so much talk. But it'll give her a terrible kind of hope. All right, I'll get her. Oh, you'd better mix one for her. She'll need it.
Wait a minute.
Yeah?
I need vital statistics on Reardon. Pictures, handwriting samples, everything. Could you help me gather them?
I'll do anything I can.
Well, then there's no need to bother her, is there?
You're a gentleman, Mr. Dollar.
I don't know why.
I do. You don't want to hurt her any more than I do.
An hour later, I was back in my hotel room. The next day, I had an appointment to meet you, Brian, and get all the material I had asked for. I was more depressed than ever about the case. About then, the phone rang. Johnny Dollar.
Johnny?
Yes.
This is Elizabeth Reardon. Please. Please don't look for him.
What?
Just forget it.
Did Hugh Bryan tell you what I was about?
I overheard you two talking. Don't bother with it. John's dead and that's that. Promise me. Promise you won't do anything else.
I'm sorry, Elizabeth. I have to investigate it.
Johnny, is that final?
I'm sorry. I don't have any choice. Elizabeth? Elizabeth!
There'll be another exciting episode in our story of the Chesapeake fraud matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow, a trip to Denver and a look at a man whose gun makes it pretty emphatic that he doesn't want to be looked at. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from CBS, heard on October 19th, 1955. And so closes this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to join us next week at the same time as we continue these broadcasts from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.